Hello and welcome to the Pax Mundi show. This is your host, Nigel Rolland, and tonight I will be talking about the ever-expanding, unending global war of terror and how we can try to resist giving up our freedoms and rights in return for a false sense of security from the orchestrated terror of that global war on terror. Remember, if you want to join in, call in and chat. You can Skype on Bob's Backyard or phone +44 161 298 0298. If you're in the UK, that's 0161 298 0298. So, first of all, I just thought I'd mention something that I read in The Economist, and it's more along the lines of nano drones. So, in a previous show, I was talking about the black helicopters, these small 4-inch helicopters that are being used by the British Army. But there was a report in The Economist this week about nano drones, actually 13 centimetres long. And these are not the helicopter type, but they're actually ornithopters, replica insects with flapping wings. So the sci-fi world of total surveillance by miniature drones of Philip K. Dick and Ian McNabb is coming closer every day. So news from the front lines of the ever-expanding global war on terror. In Bolivia first, the Bolivian president, Evo Morales, has ordered the expulsion of the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, from Bolivia. In a speech, Morales cited recent comments of Secretary of State John Kerry referring to Latin America as the U.S. backyard. He also accused USAID of using international assistance for political destabilization. Evo Morales said some institutions from the U.S. embassy continue to conspire against this process, against the people, and especially against the national government. And that is why, using this gathering and the 1st of May, we decided to expel USAID from Bolivia. USAID is leaving Bolivia. I ask our brother foreign minister to immediately speak with the U.S. embassy. We want no more USAID which manipulates, uses our brothers with charity. Morales has previously expelled the U.S. ambassador and the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency in 2008, prompting the U.S. to ban Bolivia's ambassador in a tit-for-tat move. In Washington, the State Department spokesperson rejected Evo Morales' claims and said the United States is mulling a response. He said the U.S. government does deeply regret the Bolivian government's decision to expel the U.S. Agency for International Development. We deny the baseless allegations made by the Bolivian government. Whether we'll take an action in response is yet to be determined. But the people who suffer because of this are the Bolivian people who were receiving our assistance. So more power to the government of Bolivia for resisting US interference and hegemony. Over in North Korea, the North Korean government has sentenced a US citizen to 15 years of hard labor. Kenneth Bai is accused of committing unspecified crimes against the state. And Kenneth is a native of South Korea and is a naturalized US citizen. The North Koreans claim that he entered the country on a false passport, and that he was detained after taking pictures of starving children. It is understood that Bai may be used as a bargaining chip should the US and North Korea hold talks. The FBI has recently updated its most wanted terrorists list, and they've added the former Black Panther, Asata Shakur, to their most wanted list. This is 40 years after a killing for which she was charged and was convicted in her absence. Asata Shakur, formerly known as Joanne Chesimand, was found guilty of shooting dead a New Jersey state trooper during a gunfight in 1973. She escaped from prison in 1979 and received political asylum in Cuba. On Thursday, the reward for her capture was doubled to $2 million. Shakur is the first woman added to the FBI's most wanted terrorist list, and she has long proclaimed her innocence and will continue to remain freely in Cuba. Over in Iraq, it has been the deadliest month since 2009. New figures show that at least 460 people were killed in growing sectarian and political violence in April. This is in the run-up to national elections in Iraq. The figures release coincided with the 10th anniversary of former US President George Bush's infamous Mission Accomplished declaration, and the public opening by President Obama of Bush's new presidential library in Texas. Over in Somalia, the UN has announced that over 260,000 people died in Somalia's 2011 famine. That is nearly 5% of the country's population. Half of the dead were young children. In the report, the UN faulted global inaction for worsening the crisis, saying the world failed to heed the early warnings. The UN singled out the militant group Al-Shabaab, which banned aid workers from critical areas in Somalia. I think the failure there definitely was with the Western nations, who continued to promote this proxy war in Somalia as a part of this global war of terror. All of the proxy armies operating there. There is resources to continue warfare, but not for welfare. In Syria, a lot of bad news as usual. In Syria, forces loyal to President Bashar al-Assad are being accused of killing up to 100 people, including civilians. Opposition activists say the killings occurred when government and militia fighters raided the village of Al-Baida. The attack came hours after rebels killed at least six pro-Assad fighters travelling aboard a bus. The most recent escalation of the conflict was the multiple bombing of the areas of Damascus over the weekend. There were a series of explosions around the capital of Damascus on Sunday, and these were the result of Israeli missiles in a completely unprovoked attack. Israel justified this attack by citing that they were acting in preemptive self-defense, claiming that the Assad government was planning to move rockets which had been stored in Damascus to Lebanon to put them in the hands of Hezbollah, the Shiite militia in Lebanon, and that Israel perceived that as a threat and therefore took preemptive action to attack Syria without warning. Now, the sites that were struck included a scientific research facility and several barracks in Damascus of the Presidential Guard and elite troop formations. So there were never any missiles being destroyed, and the suggestion of the missiles, you know, does seem to be a complete red herring to justify this act of war. Indeed, the Syrian government has called the strikes an act of war and stated to the UN that opened the door to all possibilities. In a statement, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged all sides to exercise maximum restraint and respect the national sovereignty and territorial integrity of all countries. Usual UN apologism for piracy and unprovoked attacks there. The US has actually apologized and supported the attack. They claim that they're in complete support of Israel's right to defend itself by making a preemptive attack, because they felt that they were, you know, at risk. And indeed, the John Kerry, was the US Foreign Secretary, has even suggested that it was the time to escalate the war because of the danger of Syria responding to Israel. And therefore, that would be, you know, the justification for U.S. Direct intervention in order to defend Israel against a possible responsive response to their unprovoked attacks. It really does get hard to understand the rationale. Definitely the situation is escalating there. The New York Times reports the US had already been discussing the launch of strikes on Syria in the days before the Israeli attack. The talks were held with the US, Britain and France, with a proposed bombing modelled on the NATO intervention in Libya in 2011. Speaking during a visit to Costa Rica, Obama appeared to offer tacit support by saying Israel has a right to stop weapon shipments to Hezbollah. So, more news from Syria regarding the allegations of the use of nerve gas and other chemical weapons in Syria. Now, the allegations have been made, the complaints were made by the opposition that the Assad government forces were using chemical weapons against the opposition, and indeed it's being used as a potential justification for intervention by the US, and Israel and Britain both claim that they have evidence of the use of chemical weapons by the Syrian government. But the UN investigator Carla Del Ponte, speaking to Swiss Italian television, said that she has strong information that the chemical weapons were actually sarin gas, was actually being used by the opposition fighters, by the paid mercenary Al-Qaeda Mujahideen groups that the West is sponsoring and supporting. So, more news yet again from Syria. 196 died each day in Syria last month. That is from the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, based in London in Britain. They're stating that an average of 196 people died each day in April. That's up from 190 per day in March. They also reported an up rise in the civilian deaths. Half of the nearly 6,000 people killed last month were civilians. Nearly 1,700 were rebel fighters, and more than 1,000 were members of the Syrian government forces. Over in the US, a US Democratic senator, Robert Menendez from New Jersey, has introduced a bill into the Senate to arm the Syrian rebel groups. The move comes following the Israeli attacks in Syria, and it would definitely be an escalation of the conflict. Over in Pakistan, there has been a lot of violence in the run-up to the national elections there, parliamentary elections due to be held in Pakistan. At least 12 people were killed and scores more wounded after a suicide blast near a vehicle carrying a candidate with the Ulema e Islam Party. The attack comes a day after at least 25 people were killed in an explosion at a political rally in the Kurram tribal area. In Afghanistan, seven US troops were killed on Saturday, making it one of the deadliest days for the US occupation. A NATO spokesperson confirmed the death of 5 soldiers in one of the 2 attacks. In Nigeria, the UN is seeking a probe into the mass killing in Nigeria last month. Killings were perpetrated by Nigerian government forces. So, getting towards the end of the news, we're just going to take a break. Okay, welcome back to the Pax Mundi show. Continuing with the news, in Bangladesh, all political rallies have been banned following clashes between police and Islamic activists, which killed 27. The police were using live ammunition against protesters, and clearly, you know, this is... this is unacceptable and disproportionate violence against what were, you know, relatively peaceful demonstrations. Although the police claim they were attacked by protesters wielding sticks and rocks. Lastly, in a case of the pot calling the kettle black, the United States has accused China of hacking its computers, hacking into the military computers at the Pentagon. So the Pentagon official, David Helvey, outlined findings of a new Pentagon report that stating that China's military continues to explore the role of military operations in cyberspace as a feature of modern warfare, and continues to develop doctrine, training, and exercises which emphasize information technology and operations. In addition, in 2012, numerous computer systems around the world, including those owned by the US government, continued to be targeted for intrusions, some of which appear to be attributable directly to the People's Republic of China government. Well, what do they expect? Lastly, on a note of good news, one of the members of the so-called Cuban Five, Rene Gonzalez, has taken the first steps to renounce his U.S. citizenship after a U.S. Judge ruled that he must do this in order to be allowed to remain in Cuba while he is on parole following his imprisonment for allegedly spying in the U.S., along with four others. The four other members of the Cuban Five remain behind bars. They claim that they were not spying on the United States, but were actually trying to monitor violent right-wing Cuban exile groups who had been responsible for criminal attacks inside Cuba. Gonzalez stated, "What is missing from this campaign is for the American people to know about the five heroes, that the American people know that the American government put us in prison to defend terrorism, because that's what we must keep in focus. This case is about the American government's right to defend its terrorists, and in order to do that, they put us in prison." So, if there's anybody out there who'd like to call in and chat, if you've got views on what's happening in Syria or any of the other theatres in the ever-expanding global war of terror, please call in. On the occupation of Mali, it looks like what was meant to be a temporary intervention is going to become a long-term occupation. with the French government stating that they are going to keep over 1,000 troops in Mali long term. The US is sending more special forces troops into Mali for training purposes as a part of the AFRICOM program. And the UN Security Council has authorized the deployment of 12,500 peacekeeping troops, which will establish bases in various parts of Mali. The UN force is also to take place alongside the 6,000 regional African force from ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, who have been also fighting the armed Tuareg and Islamist groups in the north of Mali. So tonight's main topic will be the Boston bombing. The Boston bombing, it happened so unexpectedly, and then, you know, so quickly, we were given information about the perpetrators, and the perpetrators were hunted down in you know, an unprecedented military lockdown of the city of Boston. So there was a lot of information with lots of changing details, and now we've been told that the surviving terrorist suspect, Dokhadev Tsarnev, actually has now confessed to carrying out the bombings, to planning more bombings in New York, and giving them all of the details. This happened before he had been, read his Miranda rights, or advised that he could have a lawyer present, and it you know, really does bring into question how this information was obtained. So just to kind of recap, we had this unexpected bombing of the Boston Marathon, and then this manhunt for the two alleged suspects, Tamerlan and Dokar Tsarnev. We've been told that they were monitored by the FBI, and you know, this was later revealed. The evidence would appear that this involvement with the FBI had been going on for some years, that the FBI had been following them, and indeed that they'd been involved with the FBI. So the day that the bombings happened, the FBI claimed ignorance over the identity of the two Boston bombing suspects, and called on the public to identify and find the suspects. Now, it would later appear that from interviews given to Russia Today TV by the family of the Tsarnev brothers, their mother in particular, she informed Russia Today that the biggest suspicion around the case for son's innocence, because this is what she claims her son's, you know, she believes her sons were innocent of these crimes, had been the constant FBI surveillance of her sons and of the whole family. So the whole family, the Tsarnev family, living in Kazakhstan had been interviewed and monitored over several years. And the older brother, Tamerlan, had a long-term involvement with the FBI. Now, the FBI were telling her and the family that Tamerlan was really an extremist leader and that they were afraid of him. They told the family that whatever information he is getting, he's getting from extremist Chechen websites, and that these Chechen websites were controlling him. They were controlling his every step. And now the FBI is saying that, you know, this is a terrorist act. And clearly, you know, the family refused to accept the guilt of the sons, the brothers, Tamerlan and Dokhidev Tasanev. And indeed, there is a lot of questions about this that we need to examine it more closely. What happened, when it happened, the narrative. It was an ever-changing narrative. So once the suspects had been identified, the brothers had been identified, then we were told that the next day they had committed two more crimes. Rather than you know, lying low, they had actually been involved in an armed robbery of a store, and also in the killing, the murder of a policeman at the MIT, Michigan Institute of Technology campus. So those were two things that were said, and that then later they hijacked a black Mercedes SUV, and that this was the vehicle that they were in when that they were intercepted by the police and FBI. So quite a few things there that to look at. The claim that they were robbing, that they'd been involved in the robbery of a store, was later discounted, and it was stated by the Boston police that this was not the case. Their involvement in the death of this MIT policeman, again, there's been no evidence to suggest that this was actually the case and that they were involved in this. The issue of the hijacking of the vehicle, the black Mercedes SUV, from its owner, occupier, and the allegations that they made statements to this unknown person from whom they hijacked the vehicle, that they were going to carry out further atrocities and bombings. It has been now suggested that in fact the elder brother, Tamerlan, actually owned a black Mercedes SUV. The same type of vehicle that they allegedly hijacked. So certainly some questions, you know, to be asked there over the details of you know, what happened. And then later, when the brothers were actually captured, the details of the capturing of them, they were captured separately. First of all, the eldest brother, we were informed by the news that he'd been killed in an exchange of gunfire after robbing the store. Later, the public was informed that he had been shot and fatally wounded whilst wearing an explosive jacket with a bomb strapped to his chest. Now, subsequent reports identified that he'd actually been captured alive, and indeed there are pictures that were circulated of him being paraded in handcuffs, naked, but clearly very much alive and unharmed by the Boston police.
Hello, Barry. Are you there?
Hey, good day. How are you doing? How you doing?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, I've been listening. Like, great show, guys.
Say something, please.
I got lots I'd like to say, but I don't want to take too much of your time. I've been listening to your show and real good comments today, guys. And yeah, the war on terror. What a joke this is, eh? A never-ending war. I've been studying Boston just like any other attack on the American people in the last year. There is tons and tons of controversy surrounding the situation. The fact that these guys come up with this story after being locked up for how many days is very, very convenient for the government. Everything about it stinks. Right from the beginning, it stank. And it's just another false flag attack on the American people. What they achieved by doing that, wow, they ever speed up their agenda, man. Unbelievable attack on the American soul. The fear they inflicted on American people is just beyond comprehension, going door to door with fully automatic, locked and loaded weapons, pointing them at innocent American people on the pretext of finding one bad guy. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And to me, it was just a mass acceleration of what the government in the United States of America is trying to do right now. And if people can't see the writing on the wall, man, they're blind, because this was just an unbelievable, unbelievable blatant attack on the First Amendment rights of the American people. And they all cheered. I mean, they're so brainwashed and so in such a zombie state, man. I wake up every day going, what the hell is it going to take to wake these people up? Because it's right in front of their faces. And those are a few comments I wanted to make, man. You guys are really on the ball today, and I'm enjoying listening to the show.
I'm glad you're enjoying it, and thanks for your input. Where are you actually calling from, Barry?
I'm in British Columbia, Canada.
Oh, right. Okay, that's
very
interesting.
Very close to the States.
Very interesting, Barry, because what I'd just like to touch on is some events subsequent to Boston in Canada that you may be familiar with.
Of course, this is
about Canada's war on terror, that 3 days after the Boston lockdown, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police made a TV announcement that they had foiled a terrorist plot which was going to target a rail passenger train, or so they claim. I don't know if you are familiar with this narrative.
Oh, yeah, of course. But I followed that story right to the very end, and to me, it stunk right from the beginning. How convenient for that story to rise just after this incident in Boston. My feelings are that our government is just corrupt as any other government in the world, that our government is in bed with the U.S. government, with every other governments in the world, but it's not the government, it's the people behind the curtain. And that's a very, very deep subject to get into. But if people don't believe in conspiracy theories, man, all people have to do is look what's happening in our planet and how everything is evolving into a certain direction and what they're trying to achieve with these attacks on the souls of American people and people around the world. I keep talking about America, Nigel, because I feel that America is the key. And if you had an agenda, and I believe that agenda has been in place for many, many years, but if you had an agenda to dominate this planet and to enslave the people in this world, which I truly believe they do, the first thing you'd want to do is eliminate the United States of America, it being the biggest, largest military force in the world. And that's why I keep talking about it. I hate to get back to America, but I believe America is the key.
Yeah.
A few of my thoughts.
So you said, Barry, it was convenient, and indeed it was very convenient for the Canadian government
Of course. It was just like a play being played out. I mean, it's so obvious when you look at what's going on and how that fell into everything else that's going on at the exact same time. It's just a joke. It is. It's like they're rubbing it in our faces going, ha, 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 look at us. We can do this, and you guys are so stupid, you're going to buy it.
So, as I was saying, days after this announcement of this foiled terror plot, there was a vote on in the House of Commons, Canadian Parliament, for the final reading of a new bill, Combating Terrorism Bill, the bill S7, which is now being debated in Canadian Parliament and should be concluding this week. And this bill gives the Canadian state much increased new powers, including the right to hold terrorism suspects for 72 hours without
charge. Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right.
Investigative hearings at which they believe that they have information about an imminent terrorist attack, and to strip the right of suspects to remain silent. So you were quite right there. This was very, very convenient. You know, and I think we see this, you know, increasingly when these false plots are revealed. It's always time to coincide, you know, with some political change.
Exactly. It coincides exactly with political agenda. Sandy Hook was just another example of it.
Yeah. What was interesting about this one, actually, is that the allegations and that the alleged terrorists who'd been, in fact, RCMP informants, they were Algerians who, it would seem, had been, you know, blackmailed into becoming informants from by the RCMP. And then so often these agents or informants become the patsies. They become the alleged terrorists.
Yeah, and you see that happen over and over and over again. All the CI connections to Al-Qaeda prior to 9/11, undeniable connections.
Yeah.
Now you see Al-Qaeda as a U.S. ally, you know?
That's right. Well, they are. They actually are. In so many places, they are the U.S. ally. Just in this case, they're alleging that it is that the alleged terrorists were instructed by Al-Qaeda in Iran. Now,
exactly.
For the vast populations out there, this gives them the idea that, you know, Al-Qaeda in Quran is somehow, you know, something that the Iranian government is involved with. Whereas, in fact, the jihadi groups in Iran, Sunni or Shiite jihadi groups, are actually controlled by the U.S., and they are armed and sponsored. Two groups there, Jundullah, who are carrying out regular acts of terrorism in Iran. So another group called Mujahideen al-Khalq, who are also being funded by the US. So thanks for that, Barry. Okay, so continuing with the Boston bombing, there's so much about this case that really questioned the evidence, and any subsequent trial needs to be questioned. As I was saying, that we have the second brother, Dokhadev, who was in hiding, allegedly already wounded, without a weapon. Now, this is very poignant that he was unarmed. He did not have any weapon, and yet they claim that they shot him multiple times in an exchange of fire. And most interestingly, he was shot through the throat. I mean, he had shots to his chest, his head, but to his throat. And this was very convenient because he can't speak. He actually can't even speak to his lawyer.
Imagine that, eh?
Therefore, he was in intensive care with these terrible wounds, which prevented him from speaking, yet somehow they interrogated him, and he was able to give them all of this detailed information, presumably in writing or something like that. You know, it just sounds incredible, really. And, you know, doing all this when, you know, he's in intensive care with 19 bullets in him. Incredible. So I do think this is, you know, one case that we really should be watching and, you know, questioning the narrative behind these cases, because so often we just get so much information thrown at us when these things are happening, and then they find the suspects, identify them so quickly, and then it kind of disappears and goes out of the public consciousness, and the public consciousness stays with the information that has been thrown at them. So I think the morale really out there is question everything, you know, particularly all these alleged terrorist plots that are going on in our countries. I'm getting to the end of the show now, so I'm going to thank you all for tuning in. And thanks, Barry, for your input. You know, that's really good. This is a global issue, and we need global solutions and a global dialogue. So I thank you again for tuning in, and tune in next week again for the PAX Monday show. No doubt there'll be lots more news about the ever-expanding a global war of terror. So thanks everybody out there, and don't forget to chat or phone in next time.